In the end, he couldn't stand to watch me burn. Reclined among the rocks like Venus in flames, a gutful of sleeping pills, a breadcrumb trail of personal effects scattered around my charred body like offerings to a blackened god. The smell of petrol was sharp in my nostrils as I lay down, thick-headed and dizzy with the pills. Overwhelmed with a desire to close my eyes and accept the offer of oblivion, sweet and numb. Sleep now. You'll never feel a thing. He sobbed as I lit the match. He was such a sweet boy. Lady Grinning Soul by Laura Mauro. Pain is a necessary condition of any transition. It is the trigger point for change, that intensity of sensation so strong, so unbearable that the soul's answer is to tear itself free of the flesh. For most people, this is the moment of death. The soul transcends, naked and trembling, a damp-winged butterfly unfurling from its chrysalis. The trappings of mortality are greatly overvalued. The pills had gifted me a pleasant haziness, like strolling through thick fog, looking down at one's own hand and seeing only a vague suggestion of a limb. When the fire overcame me, the pain felt strangely distant, a faraway siren urgent in its persistence. He was there, somewhere. I couldn't see him, but I felt his presence, a ghost in an adjacent room. The drugs swaddled my brain. I forced myself up, through, fingers clawing at the filmy membrane so I might feel it. Skin shrunk and crackling like a pig on a spit. The animal smell of burning hair and pain, bright and insistent as sunrise, glorious in its intensity. My nerve endings were shrill with it, singing high and loud. I reached raw fingers to the sky, liquid with heat shimmer, and I opened my mouth as far as my scorched and splitting skin would allow, and though the words were lost beneath the roar of the conflagration, I spoke them all the same. Thank you. A bar in West Berlin, that first time. I knew he was far younger than me, by the smooth, unlined skin around his eyes, dark and huge as an animal's. Narrow body, clad all in black, as though he were a shadow. He could find anything I wanted, he said, like I was naive of West Berlin's capacity for reckless decadence. Nobody slept in that city. They drank and danced and sang from the moment the sun dipped below the horizon to the moment the street lamps guttered in the pastel-hued morning chill. And still, they would keep going. The leather boys and the drag queens, the queers and the artists, stumbling out of Chez Romy Haag at 5 a.m, veins pumping black coffee and white powder. I knew about all of it, but I let him think I was innocent, gasping at each revelation. This wild, uninhibited city, this inspired island. I played a stranger in a strange land, and he was charmed by it. He took me to Kudamm, and we took turns to stand on the spot where Rudi Dutschke had been shot years before. I was not a Marxist or a revolutionary, but I felt my blood buzz as I stood there, staring out into the river of traffic. I could almost feel the kiss of the muzzle against my temple, the thrill of cold steel. They would kill me if they knew, without a second thought. What should I call you? I asked him, emerging from a closet-tiny Schöneberg bar into the star-dappled September night. He smiled, thought for a moment, calculating the specifics of his identity. I had seen that look before, 100 times. My own furrowed brow before a mirror, practicing my name, my age, my place of origin. We were of a soul, I think, and I let myself grow attached to him, in spite of my better instinct. He was not a beautiful boy, not in any traditional sense, but from an artist's perspective, he was a marvel. Stark Art Deco lines, marble and obsidian in contrast, flat planes as smooth as glass. It was the era of Bowie. To be splendid held far greater power than to be beautiful, and he was so splendid. "My name is Sasha," he said at last. He didn't ask mine, but I would give it to him freely when the time was right. Artifice bound us, inextricable, though we had known each other only a day and a night. In Berlin, time was fluid. The rise and the fall of the sun delineated nothing when you flitted between underground bars and closed-door clubs. A subterranean existence where every last abject body was perfect in the dark. An island paradise for the strange and the different and the lost. But I was not lost. I brought him to my hotel room and told his fortune. I laid out the cards on the bed as we sat and smoked, and he eyed me with a sceptical interest. "The tower," I said, placing it at the centre of the bed. I sipped blood-dark wine, the imprint of my lipstick half a heart on the rim of the glass. "A troubling card. Sudden change is coming. You cannot hold on to things as they are. You may have to abandon truths you have held dear all your life."
"You tell a good story,"
he said, flicking his cigarette into the crystal ashtray. When he smiled, I saw neat little teeth. Not a poor boy, this one. Not with his expensive suits and silk ties, oddly formal in spite of the reckless bohemia of his surroundings. Long fingers, and a sharp Florian Schneider haircut, the aggressive jut of his nose. Cultivated severity. As I poured him more wine, I realised he might have been Stasi. I knew he was only masquerading as German. His accent was not quite right, though I could not place it. Perhaps it wouldn't have troubled me at all if not for the fact that I, too, was playing at being German. "Change cannot come unless the tower is destroyed," I told him. "Only when it is ashes can you welcome the new. But the tower is a prison. It is built on rotten foundations. It does not serve you as you think it does. Better to let it burn."
"I'm not afraid of change," he said,
and his eyes were liquid fire. He might be Stasi, I told myself, as I knotted my fingers into his shirt, pressed his mouth on mine. Bitter smoke, sharp wine, and hard teeth. I swept away the cards with my bare foot, let them scatter. I felt his hesitation, the sudden tautness of his body even as he came to me, and I unbuttoned his shirt, one by one, slow, so that he might refuse if he wanted. I would not blame him, would not think him less of a man. I knew I was suspicious. I held on to a semblance of cover with the tips of my fingers, and I knew he could smell it on me, deceit sweeter than any cologne. It was unlike me to let my mask slip so readily. I tugged his shirt aside, ran an exploratory hand down his torso. The curve of his shoulders was smooth, delicate. Bandages tight around his chest, pressing his breasts flat. Slender waist, the telltale convexity of hips. Such a fine-boned boy. I tugged at his belt buckle, looked him straight in the eye. Yes? He burned with shame, with desire. He must have thought I'd revile him when I reached between his legs. He must have thought I'd reject him. A freakish thing, a boy in girl's skin. It did not matter. Flesh is so temporary. Yes, he answered. And though the words never passed his lips, his warm, eager body spoke so eloquently on his behalf. I was good at disappearing, resurfacing somewhere new, as someone new, shedding the skin I'd accumulated in my previous life, my previous self sloughed and discarded. In time, I would be forgotten, except perhaps as a shadow on the fringes of memory, a transient figure who came and went as though in a dream. I took nothing with me from my previous life. I removed packaging from cosmetics so nobody would know their origins, cut the label from my clothes. I kept my external accoutrements untraceable. And though I accrued lovers in each of my incarnations, I made certain they could not follow me when the time came for me to leave. I left Sasha sleeping. Slipped out one night, a wind-blown, directionless thing, moving silently through the Berlin night. I followed my instructions as always. New name, new passport, suitcase emptied of all but the most essential items, even those things I'd carefully anonymized. I could replace those in Norway. Somewhere on the Danish border, I had been reborn. Those weeks in West Berlin had belonged to some other woman. I had never set foot in that city in my life, had never turned dizzy circles in the blue-black shadow of the wall, cognac buzzing in my blood and bitter laughter on my lips. I had never fallen in love. These were the rules that had kept me alive. Burn everything. Leave only ashes behind. Sasha was the only mistake I ever made. In hindsight, I made it easy for him. Perhaps there was a part of me that had orchestrated the mistake. Perhaps it had not been a grievous error, but a quiet act of self-sabotage, some part of my previous self lingering in the recesses, a stain I had not been able to scrub out. Perhaps I had wanted Sasha to follow me all along. He found me in Bergen, a pale face reflected in oil-black espresso. I looked up and met his gaze, so soft, despite the anger in the thin line of his mouth, the set of his jaw. For a long moment, I didn't recognize him. He was someone else's memory, the centerpiece of someone else's love story. A boy I'd seen in passing, perhaps, in some town square somewhere. A face I had briefly appraised as a work of fine art. He wrapped long fingers around my knuckles, and his skin was so familiar.
Anna,
he said. I was not Anna. I did not look like Anna. Did not move or speak like Anna. She had been a flickering flame of a woman, fated from the first to burn out quickly. White blonde wolf in blood red lipstick. She would eat a man alive and spit out the bones. Anna would tell dubious fortunes in gaudy hotel rooms, sip rum cocktails in neon dark clubs where the bass ran through her like a second heartbeat. Of course, Anna would have been utterly disarmed by someone so sweet, so earnest. But I was not Anna. My name is Claudia now, murmured so nobody would overhear, though the coffee shop was almost empty, and nobody seemed interested in either of us. Sasha was not the sharp-edged boy Anna had left sleeping in a Charlottenburg hotel. He was dressed casually, his hair feather soft, cigarette smoke for cologne. He might have belonged anywhere. I shouldn't have been surprised. Hadn't he been blending in for years? I brought him back to my hotel, buried my face in the conch-delicate curve of his clavicle, inhaling the warm nicotine scent of him. I played Anna for him. The illusion was fragile, brittle as old ice, but he swallowed the lie gladly. And if neither of us spoke the words aloud, perhaps we could go on pretending that nothing had changed, that we were the same people we had been in Berlin, that we always would be. Afterwards, I lay my cheek against his unbound breast, running a soft thumb across the angry red lines scored into his white flesh, the scars by which he had earned his manhood. His heart was a metronome, ticking in time with my thoughts, and he slept like the dead. I wondered how I would fix my mistake, Anna's mistake. I wondered if it mattered at all, that I did not want to. It was only a matter of time before they caught me. I was not surprised when I got the call, though I was appropriately contrite. They had specified that Claudia should travel solo. The information she sought was not that that could be gleaned from beautiful boys or hedonistic girls. A companion made her more visible, and what was more, a companion was privy to the same things that she was privy to. I did not bother to tell them that Sasha hadn't been in Stavanger, nor in Trondheim, where I'd found them everything they'd wanted to know, or that Bergen was a bust and the only thing worth writing home about was the coffee. They could not be reasoned with. I had disobeyed them, and they'd have my head for it if I did not perform proper penitence. I had always been the model of obedience, performed my role with a professionalism so crisp it seemed I'd been born to play the part. Maxim's voice was as perturbed as it was angry. My first and sole transgression. And for what? For a boy? They must have thought me a machine, an automaton that fucked and drank and lied everywhere to everyone, but did not feel, did not dream some day of a life in which she might shrug on a new skin for the final time, construct piece by piece a history which she might be allowed to keep forever.
We have no time to make preparations. You will source in your disguise, and you will return home.
An order, then. A punishment. I had seen Maxim only once, and even then I could not be sure I had seen him. The man inside the shell was Maxim, but it was impossible to know whether the meat and the bones he'd couched himself in were his own. He was just like me, after all. Sasha sensed my unhappiness, ever the empath. He knew what I was, though we'd never discussed it. I'd never spoken the words aloud, and he seemed not to need my confirmation. We took one another at face value. I wonder, sometimes, if I was the only lover he'd ever had who had accepted him without question, who had seen and touched and tasted his body and understood still the truth of his maleness.
"You're in trouble," he said.
"I'm always in trouble," I replied, and lit a third cigarette. Ash formed a perfect mound on the hardwood desk. I pressed delicately with the pad of my pinky finger, cloud soft, leaving a divot in the ash, a shallow caldera at the summit of a long-dead volcano. My dry throat ached for whiskey. He pulled bare legs to his chest, propped up against the headboard. Long and thin, like a greyhound, and dog loyal, a canine eagerness to please that was untrainable, a gift he gave so freely. A gift I did not deserve, yet accepted as though it were my due.
"Is it my fault?"
he asked, a little sullen. There was no reason to protect him, except that I knew he would run if he thought he'd put me in danger. And I had already risked so much to keep him with me. No matter what Maxim said, no matter how he threatened me, I would die before giving Sasha up. Because if I did, they would kill him. He knew too much. He knew nothing at all. I pushed my thumb into the ashes, smeared them out across the dark wood, into the grain. I wanted to tell him he was an angel. That in all the lives I'd lived, in all the men and women I'd had, I'd never once felt so understood. No, love, I said. Not your fault. Never your fault. I longed for West Berlin, its gleeful sleeplessness, for the hot, dark bars and the low throb of bass everywhere, all the time, cleansing the mind of useless thoughts. I could have been Anna forever. I could have lived my whole life in the shadow of that wall. Gone now, like so many other lives I might have lived. Becoming Claudia was simple. Dye stains on hotel towels, padding at the hips and breasts, the illusion of fullness. A new speech pattern, a new gait, changes I'd made 100 times before. That was not what Maxim had meant. Usually there was anaesthetic, and they would pick the form into which I'd be moulded. Their meticulous research might necessitate a diminutive, voluptuous blonde, or a red-haired waif, a Genoese contessa, or a Czech prostitute. Whatever their extensive research dictated was necessary. Such an extravagance to wake as someone brand new, to run hands down unexplored flanks, an alien topography. This time I would have no such luxury. When I told Sasha I would have to die, he was inconsolable. Dramatic in that way that the young and the vibrant are. Those who consider death a distant, terrifying prospect, a long and terrible silence. I held him as he sobbed and begged, though I was calm. Death had long been my due, and I understood how strange it must seem to him that I would simply walk towards it with my arms held wide. Either I die on my own terms, or they will kill me, I said. It was always going to end this way. You should be glad, Sashenka. People like me, we don't get to choose very often. I held him until he slept. I lay awake, feeling the thrum of his pulse, the cool silk of his skin. My body had outlived its purpose, but his was just beginning to understand its potential. I buried my nose in his hair, inhaled the clean scent of him, the delicate curve of his skull, perfect beneath my lips. I had thought him Stasi, but he was far too pure, too honest. His was a body that had never told a lie. "Let's go walking tomorrow," I told him, when he woke a few hours later. His cheeks were fever bright, his eyes still raw. "I want to die somewhere beautiful," I said. "You don't have to come with me, of course. I'll understand." "No," he said, defiant even in his despair.
"I won't let you go alone. You deserve better than that."
There are many stories told of Lake Svarte Dike, the little ghost girl who roams the woods, bleeding dark ink from her open mouth, the humpbacked midwife with her basket of unwanted infants, their cries echoing out across the lake as she drowns them one by one. It seemed fitting then that I should pass by on my own death march. It did not seem a cursed place. Bright sun on steel blue water, the surrounding forest cast in autumnal vermilion, the gentle chatter of unseen birds, a sharp wind, abrasive, scouring the city from my lungs. The valley I chose to die in was secluded enough that I felt sure they would not find me for days, perhaps weeks. They would find me. They were too good at tracking, too clever for me to evade them for long. But it would be enough time for Sasha to get away. The fire served this purpose admirably. Charred flesh obfuscates. It muddies the waters. Until they identified me with certainty, they would not look for him. And by the time they did, I hoped he would be long gone. He could not watch me burn. I would not ask it of him. I had asked so much already. Before Maxim perfected his technique, before anesthesia and morphine and grim-faced teams in stainless steel rooms, the only way to transcend was to harness the pain, to cloak oneself in it, engulfing the body like flames, on and on until there was nothing else in the world but pain, so sharp and so exquisite that the only way through was out, peeling the flesh away like petals, struggling weak-limbed and exhausted to that singular point of light, the wide-open cavern of a screaming mouth, and that moment of pure freedom as the soul transcends, weightless, immaterial, no longer tethered to its flesh anchor. My old body, Claudia's body, Anna's body, Genevieve's body, an empty, smouldering thing in the valley below, pig flesh stink and cracked skin, arms drawn in like a boxer ready to lash out. It cannot last, though. The soul must always seek shelter. Maxim would never tell me where the usurpation caused harm. I suppose he had no way of knowing. In those days, there was no precise science to it. As an art form, it was rudimentary at best. I did not want to think that Sasha might suffer when I slipped into his body, when he found himself trapped in mine. I had stuffed my former shell full of sleeping pills. The smoke must surely have turned the lungs black, filled the blood with poison. If he felt anything upon waking in that ash-choked prison, it must only have been momentary. That is what I told myself as I flexed unfamiliar legs, the rush of hot blood into strange limbs, a gait I would soon come to think of as my own. I knew his body intimately. I would adjust soon enough. It was not the first time I had lived as a boy. I did not look back as I walked away, out of the valley, away from Norway, away from Maxim's all-seeing eye and the body he had gifted me, so perfect for the job. Away from the only life I had ever really known. I did not look back. I would honour Sasha's refusal like a final request. I would not watch him burn. Lady Grinning Soul was written by Laura Mauro and performed by Dion Winton Pollock. You can find the story in the Bidizzo Mixtape, Volume 1, from Bidizzo Books, copyright 2019. Links to the author, the publisher and the book can be found in the show notes, along with attributions for the music and sound effects I've used. Lady Grinning Soul was a Fine-Toothed Comb production.